Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com. Support for this podcast comes from the Fletcher School of Global Affairs at Tufts University. To start your future as a global changemaker, you must have context across fields like international business, cybersecurity, energy policy, and more. Don't just study global affairs, shape them. Visit fletcher.tufts.edu.
On Point is a production of NPR and WBUR Boston. The program is made possible by your financial support. Please pledge online at WBUR.org.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. 20 years ago this week, Newsweek magazine launched a front-page assault on the nerves of women of a certain age with a big cover story asserting that women over 30 had only a 20% chance of ever getting married. And women over 40, said Newsweek, in an infamous turn of phrase, were more likely to be killed by a terrorist than to ever marry. Turns out Newsweek was flat wrong. The story was a piece of media hysteria at a time of deep cultural change. Women and men today are getting married at all kinds of ages, and the magazine is now eating crow or wedding cake. Up next on Point, the marriage crunch that wasn't: men, women, and age at the altar. Joining me first today from New York is Lisa Miller, senior editor at Newsweek. She worked closely on this week's big mea culpa cover story, Marriage by the Numbers. Lisa Miller, thanks for joining us.
You're welcome.
So Newsweek says right on the cover this week, we were wrong. How did you get it so wrong?
Well, we were doing our story based on this big demographic study that came out around 86 that said that a 40-year-old woman had a 2.6% chance of ever marrying. This was a study that was creating a lot of waves in the press. A lot of people were doing this story. The AP did it. People magazine did it. We picked up the study because it was creating so much anxiety and conversation among women. And that study was way off. And then our story and the terrorist line in particular made people really angry and upset.
You quote in this week's edition Pamela Abramson, who wrote that line in an internal memo that then went in the magazine, says it was meant in jest. Still, she says, I am responsible for the single most irresponsible line in the history of journalism. I mean, it wasn't factual at all. It was just meant to say the odds of getting married if you were over 40 were almost zilch.
Right. I mean, from my point of view, sitting here, you can see how it would happen. She was working really fast. She was writing her file hastily. She put in a line that was meant to be hyperbole, a little bit flip. The writer wrote the story and just inserted the line into it. None of the editors picked it up. They all thought it was clear that it was hyperbole. But in retrospect, clearly it was too flip. It was in bad taste, especially now after 9/11. It seems like it was in terrible taste. And so, you know, it was a good opportunity to revisit it.
But there it was. You ran into a buzzsaw in response, but you also ran into reality. What was changing already in the 1980s that those researchers and Newsweek did not see at that time, Lisa?
Right. It was 1986. So this was the first generation of women who were sort of post-feminist generation women. They were well-educated. They were in the workforce. They were succeeding. They had financial independence. They had autonomy. And they were waiting to get married, but the demographers were looking at the past to forecast the future. So they were looking at stats that showed that most women were married by the age of 20, and they were looking at all these women, and they were saying, these women don't stand a chance.
And so the story went out, the marriage crunch, everybody was supposed to be scared to pieces. Of course, there was a new breed of woman coming up who wasn't afraid of that, and you write that everything has changed since then, but a lot was changing already. One of the early critics of this story is with us today. Syndicated columnist Ellen Goodman wrote back in 1986 how gleefully they warned that an uppity woman may be overqualified for the marriage market. Reach too high, young lady, and you'll end up in the stratosphere of slim pickings. Ellen Goodman, always a great turn of phrase on your side. Thanks for joining us today. What do you think was in the Newsweek mind in those days?
Well, I don't think it was just in the Newsweek mind. I think there's a long historic record of people saying that uppity women will end up alone. And that's really what the Newsweek piece was, another permutation on that very old and hostile message towards women's success. I mean, it's true from the first women who graduated, who went to college, were told that they would never marry. And it's just been part of it. Now, women are told, you know, you can't have it all, is the message of the new millennium, unless you have it in sequence or something. But there are still some very strong messages against uppity women.
Ellen, Newsweek concedes essentially in this week's article that there was a kind of hysteria then.
Yes, well, of course, with all due respect, 20 years ago, the study was debunked. The Newsweek mea culpa is a little late.
So what keeps the popular media coming back to these stories, whether it's about the mommy wars or whether it's about, you know, new female law school grads choosing to have 16 kids rather than go to work, or whether it's about 40-year-old women being warned they'll never get married? What keeps the media coming back to that, do you think, Ellen?
It's one variation on a theme that is directed toward the most successful women in society, those who have gone to college, to graduate school, to professional, and it comes with this continual warning that you will pay a price. I mean, you could flip this story on its head and say, you know, that low-achieving, non-high school graduating men have, you know, a very low chance mm-hmm. of getting married.
Mm.
But we don't do that. First of all, they don't read Newsweek, you know, so they're not part of the reader population per se. And it isn't part of the ongoing long-term mythology. And it's, you know, Lisa mentioned that the women of the 1986 were the first post-feminist generation. In fact, they were the first feminist generation that had arrived at that stature, and they were making their own decisions about work and family. And as they said, of the women that they chose to look at, what was it, 14? I can't remember.
I think a dozen women, and eight of them were married.
Eventually married. Mm. If you looked at the first piece of the so-called opt-out stories. Mm-hmm. That were done on how professional women were opting out. There was a new piece done last fall in the New York Times, but there was also a revisit of an almost identical piece done 10, 12, 15 years ago, I can't remember now, that showed that those women who, quote, opted out, went back in.
Of the workforce,
so
that is.
I think we keep having a real difficulty understanding or accepting how women are, in fact, remaking their own lives.
Lisa Miller, it wasn't just the researchers and the numbers and Newsweek that were wrong on the numbers. It was the individual stories as well. As Ellen Goodman says, you profiled a dozen women. The sort of implication was they may never marry. Most of them did. What did you find in those individual cases?
Right. We found we interviewed 14 women for the original story.
Yeah.
We found 11 of them. 8 of them had married. All of them say they're happily married. None of them is divorced. Many of them have children, either their own children or have stepchildren. The ones who were older when we interviewed them in 86, the ones who were in their late 30s, all say they were glad they waited, and then ultimately they were glad they found the partner that they found.
And so there's a story in real time of this turning around for those individuals. Ellen Goodman, what's your sense of women and age and marriage, and men, for that matter, these days, of how age is or is not a factor these days, how women we're talking about today, how they talk about it, how they see it?
Well, first of all, one of the more interesting things that's happened in terms of the attraction of people to marriage is the whole push of gay couples to get married, so that the desire to be married in this culture is still very strong.
And all over the place.
But at the same time, it's become much clearer that you can lead a great life unmarried. And people are married, single, unmarried, married, single, divorced, widowed. You know, people go through enormous changes in a long life and find different ways of making a life and making it work. So I think that we're recognizing a real change in the pattern. Also, I think we're recognizing a long, slow pattern towards much more egalitarian marriages than we had even in the 80s.
Ellen Goodman, syndicated columnist for the Boston Globe. We hear you struggling with a cold today. We're grateful to you for being with us. Thanks a lot for joining us, Ellen.
Thank you.
Lisa Miller, we've just got you for a minute here. So what did you find? What do the numbers look like now?
Well, the last time the census did these projections, they said that, which was in 1996, they said that a single woman at 40 had a 40% chance of ever marrying. And demographers today say that because of many of the factors that Ellen just mentioned, it's probably closer to 50%. So I think the take home is if you want to get married, you will. And if you don't want to get married, the world is a much more accommodating place to you than it used to be.
And how about Newsweek and your soul searching as you put this out? Are you eating crow? Are you eating wedding cake? Do you have a tighter grip on the way you think about women's stories today?
Well, I'm very happy we did this story. It's received a lot of attention, this story this week. Mm-hmm. It's received a lot of attention. It raises the conversation again, and it gives us an opportunity to revisit these old questions and talk about how much the world has changed, because it really is changing a lot. And Stephanie Kuntz in a companion piece shows how historically marriage is changing, and I think it's really good news.
Rethinking the Marriage Crunch is Newsweek's cover this week. Lisa Miller, senior editor at Newsweek magazine, thanks a lot for joining us.
Thank you.
Joining me right now from Seattle, Washington, is Stephanie Kuntz, the country's leading historian of marriage and how it's evolved. She's professor at Evergreen State College, director of research and public education at the Council on Contemporary Families, author of Marriage, A History, How Love Conquered Marriage. Stephanie Kuntz, thanks for being with us.
My pleasure.
Here you are right in the middle of this Newsweek mea culpa. They printed it in 1986. They're taking it back and giving us a more nuanced picture today. What do you think was going on when this cover story came out in 86, and what's going on now with marriage?
Well, I'd like to take Newsweek off the hook a little bit.
You think it was all of us? We're all in the game?
For hundreds of years, this was true, that people who delayed marriage, people who passed a certain point, women in particular who had higher education, the ones most likely to delay marriage, were the least likely to marry. In fact, you know, up until women born before 1960, it was true. If you had higher education, you were much less likely to marry than other women. So those women born in 1960 were just turning 26 in 1986. They were entering a whole new world that couldn't have been predicted. On top of that, of course, we were just coming out of the 50s when half of all women were married by the time they turned 20. And you really didn't have much of a chance of marrying if you know, marriage was such a rigid, lockstep institution. If you didn't marry by the time you were 23 or 24, you were what the Japanese called Christmas cake. You were going to be left on the shelf and never purchased.
The day after Christmas.
Yeah, exactly. Newsweek wasn't alone. But what people weren't recognizing is that this woman's movement and the entry of women into the workforce and changing values on the part of men as well as women, incidentally, I think men's changes have been greatly underestimated. All this has made marriage a whole new ball game in many, many different ways. All the rules. I mean, it wasn't just Newsweek. A lot of the experts handing out marital advice that you'll still find on the bookshelves are dead wrong. They're out of date.
So there was a lot of folk wisdom in a way that had not been so wrong, still running through this article maybe. Stephanie Kuntz, run us through the numbers, if you would. I mean, it's striking when you go back. You point out that in the 50s, 60s, the average age of first marriage was 20, the greatest single number of women marrying at 18 years of age, very few marrying for the first time after 24. How have things changed?
Well, since then, they've just been turned around. The average age of marriage for women today is 25.8. It's 27 for men. It's 27 plus for women who have a college degree, and it's 30 for women who have a higher degree or professional. And I think even more important than this is something that I feel passionately about when people call me up and they say, oh, what are my chances? I get a lot of those calls, you know. The averages no longer describe the typical experience.
Because?
When big social changes begin to occur, old categories break down. And therefore, you know, like before the Industrial Revolution, all farmers basically lived the same. You know, if you described the...
Well, sounds like we lost Stephanie for a moment there, but we've got a lot of listeners who want to join us. I'm sure we'll have her right back. Let me turn to Kathy in Jamaica Plain, Massachusetts. Hi, Kathy. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Great topic. I read this article 20 years ago when I was a
college senior in Boston, getting ready to graduate, very focused.
So you remember it vividly. You read the Newsweek piece. It was, how did it strike you then? You were not exactly a Christmas cake. Scary?
Oh, it was completely scary. It was like, okay, if you want a career, which I did, I was very scared. I thought, okay, that's it. I can either become what I want to become and maybe not get married for a really long time, if ever. So it had a huge... It caused a lot of stress.
It put the fear in you and a lot of other people. Do you remember the line about women over 40 having a greater chance of being killed by a terrorist than ever getting married?
I don't remember that exact line, but I remember it being something like being hit by lightning or
right.
something. So I do. I don't remember the terrorist, and I think it's unfortunate.
So tell us your story. We hear what might be a little evidence in the background of marital relations.
Well, I was just going to say that, you know, I read the article then. I have the article now on my dining room table, but I don't have time to read it because I'm working part-time. I'm going to grad school, and I have two young children under three. And it's just, if I had known then what I know now, I could have saved myself, you know, a few years of discomfort and agony. I didn't get married till I was 39.
But you could have relaxed into that process, you're saying.
Yeah, and enjoyed maybe... And I think women today probably are in a better position. I could have enjoyed, I mean, I did enjoy being single and working and focusing and having that time, but I think there was always that fear, I want to have kids. And the biological clock is another thing I think that fits really well into this.
Well, sure, that's a kind of reality. I mean, extended now technically, but still, it sits there.
Right, but you also have this fear that, you know, oh, you can't get pregnant. And I have plenty of friends, myself included, who are having children in their late 30s, in their early 40s. And, you know, it's just, it seems, and I think Ellen Goodman sort of alluded to this, that it's always something to make women feel bad.
Yeah.
You know, are you working? Are you not working? Are the kids in daycare? Are they not?
Right.
And I'm feeling that now, the mommy wars thing, you know?
So yet another front here. Kathy, stick with us. I think we've got Stephanie Kuntz back in Seattle. Stephanie, we lost you for a second there. But here's Kathy, who read the Newsweek piece in 1986, and says it really kind of cast a pall. It cast the fear into her then, and she could have lived without that extra stress.
Oh, yes. I mean, these sorts of predictions, as Ellen was saying, combined with all sorts of ways. You know, if you work, you're going to do this. If you're higher education, you have a better chance of divorce. Actually, it turns out you have a lower chance of divorce if you're not married by a certain time. And women who want to be able to be real independent human beings and have work and education are being told that everything they do that increases their own self-fulfillment is not only, you know, a sin against repopulating the earth, but is also hurting their chances to have a personal life. It's just not true, but it's very, very destructive. I meet women every day, and increasingly men, too, who are worried by these out-of-date predictions.
Kathy, we see how your story changed. What's your advice to young women today about, you know, balancing all the demands here when it comes to marriage, career, and the time clock?
Well, I would say that, you know, you do have some time. You might not have all the time in the world, but you do have some time. And I think you have to enjoy the stage that you're at and not be always looking ahead, which is something that I came to relatively late in life. Enjoy the time you can just focus on your career. Enjoy the time that you're maybe home with young children. Enjoy the time when you're working part. You know, just don't be always worried and looking ahead. Just try to focus on the now and try not to, you know, women are supposed to support each other and help each other. And unfortunately, in a lot of ways, that just isn't happening.
Let it unfold. We hear how it's unfolded for you right there in the background. Kathy, thanks very much for calling.
Thank you.
Stephanie Kuntz, you write that the old rules of marriage are particularly bad guides for modern relationships. And I wish you'd walk us through what those were and how they often misguide today.
Well, of course, the most obvious ones that Newsweek got wrong in 86 were that if you delayed marriage, you would never have a chance of marriage. Another old rule is that if you don't marry within a certain range, that somehow you're out of the picture. And one big thing that's changed, as I started to say when I got cut off, is that averages no longer predict because people's lives, we have so many more choices. We're not marching in lockstep anymore. Another big rule was the one that women with higher education are more less likely to marry and more likely to divorce. Those things were true once, but they're not true anymore. College-educated women, divorce rates are half those of women with a high school education or less. Their marriages have become more stable over the last 20 years. And you also have these other rules about what makes a marriage work. We've heard a lot of recycling of this idea that, in my opinion, is really kind of a diss on men as well, that an educated, independent woman is not attractive to a man. They want younger wives who kowtow to them. Again, this is from the 1950s and 60s. You know, in the 1950s, literally some of the most famous, well-respected psychologists in the country were telling women, well, you must never consider yourself an expert on anything. If your marriage is going wrong, one of them suggested, fray a lamp cord to create a short, and then your hubby can feel so good about how much more he knows than you.
He'll fix it for you.
You know, men don't want that anymore. We're finding that the age at first marriage is, the difference is lower than it's ever been. Men are wanting to marry their educational equals. The higher the degree of gender equality in any culture, we have cross-cultural studies on this, and in any state, you find that the men are more wanting to marry someone who's their equal, and that women are less likely to want to marry an older guy who's going to be the male provider. Hey, they can provide for themselves. They want somebody who shares the household joys and work with them and who can talk to them. So all these old rules are up for grabs, and it does us no good in today's world to scare ourselves with them.
Let's turn to our listeners. Michelle's calling from Boston. Hi, Michelle. You're on the air.
Hi. Oh. I have 2 points, actually. I was just going to... I agree with what everyone's saying, but one is I can't understand why this is such a big story still, because it means that marriage is still something that we value so highly and that somehow women need to get married. I mean, the underlying assumption is that somehow that's a good thing.
Well, if you look around, I mean, lots of people are single, unhappily single, but society clearly does still value marriage.
Right, which is why it's the story being such a big deal just kind of perpetuates that kind of...
Do you think that's
attitude.
A bad thing, that too much emphasis on marriage? Why?
Because I think, you know, as both of your Ellen and Linda have spoken before, marriage has changed completely. And there are now new kinds of marriage where it's just partnerships, and it's not a matter of, you know, what it used to be, where someone's taking care of someone, someone's providing some kind of income, and the other person is taking care of the house or something like that. It's changed.
And you had another point, Michelle, you said?
Oh, the other point is that 40 is a long time to wait to have children, and it's not safe for women to just think that you can have kids after the age of 40 and that's A-okay. There's, you know, it's scientifically, it's not as safe to have kids that late. And you have a higher risk of breast cancer and all kinds of other cancers when you have children that late. So I just want to say that it's not as... I think sometimes people have to make hard choices, and I know it sucks, but saying that everyone feels good or everyone's going to be okay is not the right attitude to have either.
So heads up in a couple of directions here. Stephanie Kuntz, Michelle says, first of all, why is marriage still such a big deal given all the permutations that are out there today? And secondly, if you are going to do it and you want kids, maybe 40 still does matter.
Well, in the first place, I think this is a really, this point about being single and married, you know, making all this big deal about getting married as though it was, and it always directed at women, by the way, when actually many polls show that men are more interested in getting married than women.
And think about it a lot.
And benefit from it more in some ways, although a good marriage benefits both. But I think that your caller is completely correct. These studies show that although on average married people tend to be happier and healthier, that's in comparison, of course, to a lot of divorced people. And people who divorced didn't have very happy marriages in the first place. When you compare unhappily married people to divorced or single people, they're worse off. So there are worse things than not being married. And in particular, when you look at women, and this in this they have an advantage over men, women who have been single all their lives report, even if they went through periods of feeling very bad about not being married, their levels of happiness at the end, toward the end, after 50 and 60, are the same as those of even happily married women, just about the same. So there are lots of options. Now, I'm not an expert on the childhood, the childbearing thing. I do know that the boundaries are being pushed back, and they are being pushed back with more safety, but there are still issues involved in it, and your caller's right there, too. You have to think about that. On the other hand, there is such a thing as adoption, and, you know, there are some women who reach 40 and don't have a child and who have one out of wedlock, and increasingly those are women who have the economic wherewithal to have these children. I would not advocate that. Having a child, raising a child by yourself is a very tough thing to do. But the fact is that women have more choices than they've ever had before, and we should be not beating ourselves up, and especially not rushing into the kinds of marriages that are going to be more risky because they're rushed into, because we've got these statistics looming over our heads.
I want to welcome into our conversation from Los Angeles, Lori White. She's Associate Vice President for Student Affairs at the University of Southern California. She's 48 years old, a single African-American woman with a PhD. Lori White, you're in the new Newsweek story talking about your situation with marriage. People tell you you're picky. How do you look at it?
Hello, Tom.
Hi.
Well, my mother always told me that I could afford to be picky, and I would love to be partnered, but I'm very happy being single, and I know a lot of people who are in miserable marriages, and so I made the decision that I'd rather wait until I could find the right match for myself and enjoy my life until that happened.
And do people still cock their eye at you when they learn you're 48 and single, or is it just A-OK these days?
Well, I think certainly, as some of the callers have said, that there's a lot less pressure for a woman to be married early, and there's a lot less stigma attached to being single at 48. But people do look at me when they find out that I've never been married, I don't have children, etc. So it certainly still comes up in conversation.
And you're that PhD candidate. Has that been an advantage or the opposite when it comes to the marriage market, in your view, Lori?
Well, as I always tell people, I'm a single African-American woman with way too much education. So I think in some situations, it's certainly a disadvantage. Put it this way, when I go to a bar, I don't lead with the fact that I have a PhD.
It may not be the first thing out of your mouth. Lori White in L.A., Stephanie Kuntz in Seattle, please stand by. Wendy's calling from Townsend, Massachusetts. Hi, Wendy, you're on the air.
Hi, how are you?
Good. What do you think, Wendy?
Well, when I turned 40, my sister-in-law, Dr. Susan Mattis, said to me, "You are entering the age of empowerment." And I totally agree with that. I think that women are much more comfortable and confident in their 40s, and they're able to look around at what they want in life.
And how does the age of empowerment intersect with marriage, or does it for you, Wendy?
Well, for me, I have been married a long time, 18 years. But I think that I have a happier marriage at this age because I'm happier with myself, confident. I feel like a powerful woman. And I think that my husband finds that more attractive, and I think that men find that more attractive when women know who they are, what they want, and it's sort of a good playing field.
We feel your comfort on it, and we're glad for your call. Lori White, how about it? The age of empowerment, there's confidence and status in your case and power in a new world. Does that make marriage more appealing, less appealing, more or less necessary? Does it make it more or less likely?
Well, I don't know that it makes it more necessary, but I think all of us have this interest and need to partner with someone, whether that's in a formal marriage situation, an ongoing dating situation, living with someone. What's wonderful about being in one's 40s, and in my case, single, with a nice job and a nice salary, is that I can afford to do lots of kinds of things that people feel like they can only do if they're married. So, for example, I own my own home. If there's a place to which I want to travel, I can do that. I've got discretionary income. And I can also afford, again, to make good choices about who it is that I may end up partnering with. I don't feel like I have to settle for anything.
Stephanie Kuntz, what do you make of Lori's story? Here she is, very accomplished.
Well, I think it's just absolutely typical. You know, I often run into young women who tell me they're desperate to get married. And I say, no, you're not. Desperate is marrying a guy with, you know, with horrible personal habits that your parents picked out for you because you can't afford to live on your own. picky. We're more picky today. And yes, most people would like to have a partner, but that doesn't mean they'll settle. I think Lori is exactly right. This is the new attitude of women. But for those who want to get married and are at an older age, it's certainly never been an easier time. Remember feminist icon Gloria Steinem, who held out until she was 66 and married for the first time then. And also, there's an interesting other new angle here. Because men are changing and beginning to catch up, they're much less concerned about having younger, more pliable women. In fact, a third of all women aged 39 to 44 are living with younger men, and we're seeing more and more of those kind of reversal, I wouldn't say December, May, but certainly September, May hookups. And that's another way in which all of this has changed.
Lori, are you open to that? And what about the race factor? Is it a factor in your marital status?
Well, you know, I'm certainly open to dating outside of my race. And in fact, I told my friends when I turned 35 I would start dating white guys, and when I turned 40 I'd start dating women if I was still single. So I'm certainly open to dating a man who's not African American. I just think it's easier if somebody is African American. You don't have to deal with all the other issues that are challenging in a relationship.
Well, Lori White, it's wonderful talking with you. We thank you very much for being with us today. Good luck on whatever path. It sounds like a good one.
Thank you so much, Tom.
Patrick is calling from Charleston, South Carolina. Patrick, you're on the air.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I find this an interesting conversation because I just recently got married, actually for the third time. I'm 57 years old, and I guess the moral of my story is I finally got it right.
How old's your wife, Patrick, if I may ask?
She's 52.
Okay.
And we're both professionals. I think that some of the differences that have been discussed, the fact that women are stronger both internally and in terms of their own financial setting does create some issues, particularly for the traditional male situation where they're really looking for a mother surrogate. I think that's changed a lot, and I applaud it. I think that it's the strength of the relationship that counts, and I think that we're looking at a new age where this becomes more common and less common. I think that it's one of the few things that I see that bodes well for our society.
Well, we're happy for the high five there, Patrick. Thanks very much for calling. Let me get a call from Brookline, Massachusetts. Clint is on the line. Clint, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
How are you?
We're good. What do you know?
Well, my observation has been that there are This is for the same for men and women in some ways. There are a lot of people who don't get married because nobody wants them when they're older. But there are a lot of women who wait and try to meet men their own age, and they meet a lot of them, but the reason they don't marry them is that there are reasons why these guys aren't married. So the women over 40 or 50 who are getting married, who are they marrying? Are they marrying men who are older, who are widowed, or who are younger, who've not been married but say haven't reached the age 40 and I'm a confirmed bachelor stage.
That's
who are these men? That would be interesting to know.
Clint wants to know, who are these guys? Clint, thanks for calling. Stephanie, how about it? I mean, there's a sort of a tone here that everything's hunky-dory, but you also hear still a kind of stream of angst out there among some women who feel like, oh my gosh, you know, what's the pool of prospects look like?
There are a couple of reasons for angst and anxiety. One of them is simply that it is harder to meet eligible people as you age. You know, it's one thing when you're in high school or college and you've got this big pool of people the same age and the same marital availability. So that's one reason for anxiety, but I think we've been establishing that it's not a reason for more anxiety than a little sort of, okay, how do I do this nowadays? And, of course, when you add the Internet, that has really increased the pool, too. But there are two other things. One is that it is getting more difficult for impoverished women to marry, partly because of the problems we have with lack of secure jobs for men. You know, it's no longer a case where a woman is willing to marry a man with any employment prospects because they're better than hers. That's no longer true. So part of this is a crisis for young, less educated educated men. And that is a particular problem in impoverished sections of the African-American community. So it's ironic that we start soul-searching about the poor problems of these white professional women who are actually doing better. But the second thing is a good point your caller raised. Sometimes I don't have the exact percentages. I don't know that they're available. But certainly, some of these first-time marriages for women over the 40 are second or third time marriages for men who didn't get it right the first time. And so that, you know, that makes you anxious because you certainly don't want to be. I think most independent women don't want to be someone who busts up another marriage.
Right.
But more often it's because a marriage has busted up, sometimes because the man married with those traditional values and either was left. Two-thirds of older marriages occur not because the man dumps the woman for a younger model or a different model, but because the women are fed up with the overly traditional relationships. So maybe these men have learned something from that, which makes them better partners.
So give us the big picture, Stephanie. Here we are. You say marriage has changed more in the last few decades than it had in hundreds of years before that. From the male perspective, from the female perspective, is it healthier? Is it better? Can people settle down and take it easy? You point out the danger if you don't have a secure job or secure prospects. That's tough, and that applies to an awful lot of people.
Yes, it does. And that's a big marital stress. And in the, 50-100 years ago, people would have stayed in very bad marriage situations because they had so few options. I think what's changed, looking at this from a historical point of view, it was only 200 years ago that we decided marriages should be about love rather than economic and political convenience. It was only 100 years ago that we added sexual satisfaction to the idea, okay, women have a right to that too, and men should be faithful. Up until then, that wasn't an expectation. It was only 30 years ago that we added equality. Right up till the 1970s, the laws were, not all men took advantage of them, but the laws gave men the final say in many marital decisions. So we are really beginning to have to remake marriage, house by house, person by person. And I think that the optimistic sense, here's the big paradox we face. When it is more possible to get a marriage at any age and to develop a more individualized, negotiated marriage that's not based on gender stereotypes or on social pressures, when such a marriage is formed and when it works better than any of the couples I studied over 4,000 years of history would ever have dared to dream. But the same things that make it more beneficial, more fair, fulfilling, and loving also make it more optional, make it more fragile, because it seems less bearable when it doesn't work.
Stephanie Kuntz, you are always great to talk to. We thank you for your perspective today. Thanks a lot for being with us.
Oh, my pleasure, really.
Stephanie Kuntz, author of Marriage, A History. This is On Point.